Alex Dono Show here on WQAM. I've already used up all my voice for tonight. No, it's okay, because I'm only on 2 hours, not 4 hours tonight. Thursday night football, Saints and Cowboys tonight, 8 o'clock. You'll hear it here on this radio station. Prior to 8 o'clock, you'll hear me. So strap yourselves in for that. Hylia Hector producing tonight. If you'd like to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines. 305-567-0560. 954-567-0560. Pound 560 on your cellular, or you can get at us on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line at 560-22. But please don't text and drive. I love the latest piece of outrage against Mark Richt. Okay, so there is some outrage over not having hired and apparently not even searching for an offensive coordinator right now. In case you were keeping score, Cliff Kingsbury, easy for me to say, looks like he's headed to USC. Although maybe that's not been quite finalized yet. So if he doesn't go to USC, he may go coach, probably be an OC in the NFL somewhere. He's not coming here. As soon as Cliff Kingsbury, who might be the best looking man on the planet, not that that really matters, but it's an observation I've made over the years. So when Cliff Kingsbury was fired by Texas Tech, became available, a lot of Hurricanes just fans just throwing darts against the wall. Well, he'd be a great fit here. Yeah, and he would be. But apparently there's not really been any attempt made to bring Cliff Kingsbury here. So he's going to end up either in Southern California as the new offensive coordinator at USC, or, you know, he's going to end up in the NFL somewhere if the USC thing has not been made official. There are some conflicting reports there. But that's not the outrage I'm talking about. The outrage I find very interesting against Mark Richt over the last 24 hours comes from the fact that so a certain class of 2020 quarterback has chosen LSU over Miami. Max Johnson has committed to LSU over Miami. I guess normally that's not like the biggest piece of news in the world. Okay, we lost out on a commit to a guy who had actually been recruited by Miami when he was in eighth grade. He's a junior now. He's committed somewhere else. It's not the bit. It happens sometimes in college football. But the reason why this is making so much news is, so who is Max Johnson in relation to Mark Richt? Well, he's literally Mark Richt's nephew. So him choosing to go to LSU, he's actually, by the way, not only is he the nephew of Mark Richt, he's the son of Brad Johnson, former Florida State and NFL quarterback. That was the stiff that won the Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 02, Brad Johnson. That's his kid. He's also Mark Richt's nephew. But it's become big news on Kane's Twitter, college football Twitter, that the nephew of Mark Richt has chosen to go somewhere where his uncle does not coach. His uncle is the head coach at Miami. His uncle is not the head coach at LSU. He's chosen to go play at LSU. Now, let me just put this out there. Because at this point, a lot of the outrage against Mark Richt, some of it's fair, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the man's doing a perfect job. Some of the outrage against Mark Richt is fair. A lot of the outrage against Mark Richt is recreational outrage. Everything this man does, you're angry at him for a couple of things. Let's be angry at him for everything. So I'll ask you this. For everyone who's complaining that Mark Richt's nephew has decided to go play quarterback somewhere else other than where his uncle happens to be the head coach, do you really want Mark Richt's nephew to be one of the quarterbacks on his roster in a couple of years? I mean, this is Kane's Twitter. The same group of people who throughout this season had accused Mark Richt of showing unreasonable favoritism to Malik Rozier this season. What's his love affair with Rozier? Why does Richt give Rozier so many chances? Why does Richt keep letting Rozier start when Nkosi Parrish, at one mistake, Nkosi Carey gets benched, Rozier can make as many mistakes as he wants to with impunity. So you felt like Mark Richt had some unreasonable bromance with Malik Rozier. Malik Rozier, who, by the way, not a blood relative with Mark Richt. You know who is a blood relative to Mark Richt? Max Johnson. Do you really want that complication on the roster? I'm just asking, because that, to me, that could be just from a PR standpoint, a recipe for disaster. What if Max Johnson, who is a four-star commit, apparently, I'm not sure how. Listen to Max Johnson's numbers from this past season as a junior. Trey Scott from 247 tweeted this out. Now, I'm not going to pretend I watched a second of Max Johnson playing in high school in Georgia somewhere. I didn't, but Trey Scott actually did. Trey Scott from 247 Sports tweeted, people are giving Mark Richt hell for quote-unquote losing control of his nephew, 2020 quarterback Max Johnson, who committed to LSU. But Johnson completed 38% of his passes as a junior with a 7-6 touchdown interception line. We sure he was a Miami take? Wow, that's actually, how are you a four-star recruit when you're completing 30? Listen, I guess they feel like he's got a great arm and a lot of potential. It is what it is. I don't know if this kid's going to be actually that great. That's number one. Number two is, you enter a situation in a couple of years where if Max Johnson had committed to Miami, he's playing for his uncle. Mark Richt gives him a chance to start. He struggles. Maybe the leash is a little bit too long. Becomes Armageddon with the fan base. Why is he playing favoritism with his nephew? Or, God forbid, he does have to put his nephew back on the bench after giving him a chance to start. You create a lot of family tension. I'll be honest here. I think it's probably better for us and for Mark Richt and for Mark Richt's family that you don't even create the conflict of interest that comes from your nephew playing quarterback for a team you coach. Keep something else in mind here. What has everyone been saying all season long? Mark Richt's got to fire his son. John Richt, his son, doing a terrible job coaching the quarterbacks. Why did he ever hire his son to such a high-profile job in the first place? Why did Mark Richt put himself in this terrible spot where he employs his own son and maybe he puts himself in a position to have to fire his own son? So you're mad enough at that. Why does Mark Richt have his son on a prominent position on his coaching staff, yet now you're angry that Mark Richt's nephew doesn't want to come play quarterback at Miami? I think we're all better off for this. And it's not to say we don't need quarterbacks, right? Like, I hope we get a quarterback in the class of 2020 because we don't have one in the class of 2019. I hope 2020 ends up stacked with Hurricane commits at quarterback. 2021, same thing. Give me enough quarterbacks because if recent history has showed us anything, not everybody pans out, right? Not every quarterback turns out to be great. And sometimes you're going to have quarterbacks, Jack Allison, Evan Sheriffs, who end up getting, you know, disillusioned and transferring. You know, we'll see if we keep both of the young quarterbacks. Well, all the young quarterbacks, because Cade Weldon also in that mix. We'll see if we keep all the quarterbacks who played this year. We'll see if nobody transfers this coming offseason. So, yeah, I'm fine with loading up on quarterbacks in 2020. I just don't think Mark Richt's nephew was somebody we had to have come play football in Miami. That's all. I think this may be a blessing in disguise because I think about all the awkwardness, all the complications, all the conflict of interest that might have come with Max Johnson playing quarterback for his uncle at the U. We're probably better off that that young man is on his way to LSU. Now, 2-3 years from now, Max Johnson turns out to be a Heisman candidate out in the bayou somewhere. Feel free to throw this back in my face, right? Like, if Max Johnson ends up on the Heisman shortlist, LSU Tigers are contending for a national championship, and, you know, we've got some, like, three-star nobody playing quarterback here, then feel free to throw this back in my face. But I honestly believe that what happened this week with Mark Richt's nephew choosing to play football somewhere else, it's probably best for everybody in this spot. My South Florida teams are struggling. I heard Hector, Hialeah Hector, you said in the update, it's a slow sports day because none of the South Florida teams are playing tonight. We may be better off, man.
You mentioned that.
Because it seems like every time the Panthers play, they lose. Every time the Heat play, they lose. Like, the joke is on all of us because, like, the Heat are going to end up tanking, but they're not even trying to tank. Like, those players on that court in those vice uniforms where they cannot win. They cannot win in the vice uniforms. They cannot win at home. They can't do anything right. I know that we have guys injured. I get it. Goran Dragic might make this a different basketball team if he was playing right now. But it's like the Heat are like, unlike the 76ers, like, they're going out there giving 150% effort every night. Dwayne Wade dropped 35 points in Toronto a few nights ago, and this team is still losing all of these games. So you might end up, if you're so in love with Zion Williamson, you want to get one of those top three picks, you may get a top three pick without even really trying to get a top three pick.
You know what might happen? Pat Riley might want to make a deal to make this team better, to be a sixth seed or a fifth seed or a seventh seed, and make it to the playoffs.
I don't want that at this point. Do you?
Well, that's when nobody wants that. I want Zion.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, how frustrated would you be if, like, if they make some move for like a borderline all-star player, gets you the 7 seed in the East, you make the playoffs, you get dropped in the first round by like the Boston Celtics or the Toronto Raptors, and then wow, so no lottery pick. We got the 7 seed in the East. We won 42 games this year. We're still stuck in purgatory. You're right, man. If you're going to be bad, be bad. If you're going to be a Bear, be a Grizzly. Like if you're going to have an average season at this point, you might as well have a terrible season and give yourself a chance for a good draft pick. I'm completely with you. A little bit later on this hour, we'll talk about Kenny Stills being frustrated. I got to warn you about something, though, because I know everyone has seen the Kenny Stills quote today. I can't throw the football to myself. And I think when you read it on Twitter, you just kind of assume that's Kenny Stills yelling. That's Kenny Stills sounding angry. That's Kenny Stills' face turning red. You know, kind of the way that that Jarvis Landry used to sound when he was frustrated, right? I've been in a lot of media scrums, a lot of interviews with Jarvis Landry, you know, for the last few years when he was in Miami. That dude knew how to get angry after a game. That dude knew how to get angry and frustrated in a practice. Kenny Stills is always smiling, right? Kenny Stills is, listen, I know that some of you have just judged the guy on the fact that he has the audacity to take a knee during the national anthem. You've completely written him off as a human being, despite all the community service he does, despite all the mentorship he's done with many of his young teammates. I think Kenny Stills is a great guy. Some of you have judged Kenny Stills as a terrible person because you don't like the way he conducts himself during the Star Spangled Banner. You're entitled to those feelings, no doubt. But I'm also here to tell you that what Kenny Stills said today, I think if you just read the quote on the internet and you didn't actually hear it or you didn't actually see him when he said it, you may be passing some judgment on the quote that isn't completely accurate. So we'll get to that. But coming up next, we'll talk some Canes with Manny Navarro from The Athletic. We'll ask Manny if he's upset that that Mark Richt's nephew isn't coming to the U. But guys, if you're looking to make a move and sell your home, I know how stressful buying and selling a home can be. I've been through it, my friends. If you have a typical real estate agent, it can be a very difficult experience. There is nothing typical about my man, Osmani Garcia. Here's why you need to call Osmani Garcia. Osmani Garcia of the Omega Home Selling Team. Guys, he's got a database of buyers in waiting right now. He has over 473 buyers looking to buy a home right now in the South Florida area. Osmani actually guarantees in writing that if he doesn't sell your home, he's going to pull out his checkbook and buy your home. So think about that. He has buyers ready to buy, nearly 475 of them. And if he doesn't sell your home, Osmani will buy it himself. So here's what you do. You call Osmani Garcia at this number, 1-888-411-HOME. He sells homes for more money. He sells homes for at least 3% more than the average agent. And I love the way he uses technology, by the way. I just saw this great deal from Osmani. So he recently sold a home in the Coconut Grove, Coral Gables area using technology to help sell this home. He uses this tool called Matterport, where you can literally take a 360-degree virtual tour of every home that Osmani is selling. So if you're selling, this tool can work for you. So Osmani was able to sell this home in the Coral Gables, Coconut Grove area for $15,000 above the appraisal value. I mean, this is unbelievable. And he's making deals like this every single day. He sells homes faster, by the way. The typical agent takes 120 to 180 days to sell a home. Osmani and his team sell homes in 59 days or less. That's why they are the home of the 59-day sale guarantee. When you call Osmani, when you sell with Osmani, your home is more likely to sell. Call my guy Osmani. He will sit with you, establish a price and a deadline. And if that deadline passes and your home has not been sold, he'll buy it himself for cash. So there is no risk to working with Osmani. He offers a one-day listing agreement. If after one day Osmani doesn't do his job, you're free to get out of the contract. But don't worry, you're not going to have to do that. He always does his job. Call the only guy that I would call to sell my home, Osmani Garcia, 1-888-411-HOME, the home of the 59-day sale guarantee. Some restrictions apply. After you call Osmani, you can start packing. Man, these texters are trying to figure me out. Yeah, I just gave you a long rant about how I think it's a blessing in disguise that Mark Richt's nephew isn't coming to Miami. I don't want to add that complication. I mean, it's already hard enough to have his son working under him. Yeah, do I want his nephew to be one of his quarterbacks? Texter writes in, Donna, you're really reaching for straws on possible drama with family and nephew. Admit he just lost a recruit. Well, yeah, listen, I guess he lost a recruit. I just think we're all better off for this in the long run. We go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline, bring in our pal Manny Navarro. Buy now and save big during the grand reopening of the all-new Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. Manny Navarro does a great job covering the Canes for The Athletic. He's also a columnist on The Athletic, doing great work. So, Manny, am I reaching at straws to say that I'm really not upset that Mark Richt's nephew isn't coming here to play quarterback, because I don't want to add more family drama to that equation?
It's funny that you took that stance. You're not the only one, clearly. I mean, there's a lot of people who believe that there's a little too much nepotism just having John Richt on staff, and bringing his nephew in would only cause more headaches. So I get the perspective. It's not a crazy one. That said, I will say this. Max Johnson was the highest rated quarterback in 2020 that Miami was talking to. Everybody else is actually rated lower than him. So you can look at the high school stats and say, well, he only completed 38% and TD interception ratio isn't great. But look, the fact is he's going to LSU, and there were a lot of schools that offered him scholarships. So I'm pretty sure that the same way Bubba Baxter was 3 of 9 or whatever it was in high school field goals, I'm sure this kid could play the quarterback position if he's going to LSU.
Well, so where do we stand, speaking of Mark Richt and things to complain about? Is there any noise whatsoever about a play caller or an offensive coordinator? I know that people are freaking out about Cliff Kingsbury going elsewhere, but it's not like Miami was talking to him anyway, right?
No, not that I know of. There hadn't been any channels of communications yet. You know, there's a lot of people behind the scenes that are pushing for an offensive coordinator, people that give the school a lot of money, that want Mark Richt to give up the play calling and for the program to hire an OC. But Blake James has gone on record saying, you know, he's not going to push Mark to do that, that Mark's in charge of his own staff. And this is going to come down to ultimately Mark deciding whether or not he thinks he needs an OC. I don't know how he feels. We haven't had a chance to talk to him. I know that every time the conversation has come up about play calling, he's kind of shoved it away and said, you know, these are the plays that have worked for years. So I don't know. I don't know where the Hurricanes stand right now. I do know there are a lot of powerful people behind the scenes pushing for one. And we'll have to see here if at the end of this recruiting, you know, next 3 weeks before signing day, if Mark gets on board with that idea or not.
Manny Navarro from The Athletic joins us here on WQAM. Yeah, Manny, do you have a hunch or any inside information on which bowl game Miami ends up in?
Everything I was hearing at the end of the Pitt game was that they're going to be playing in Jacksonville. That's sort of the overwhelming sentiment from the inside, that they'll be playing in the Taxpayer Bowl. But again, these things, you know, the ACC ultimately decides. The conference sits there and decides where they're going to send teams. And geographically, you know, it makes sense because Miami's within driving distance of Jacksonville. It's a 5-hour ride. A lot of fans can get to that game. So, you know, I've thought all along it was going to be Shreveport because I didn't think Miami would get into those Tier 1 bowls. But considering that there's just a mess of teams that all finished 7-5, I certainly think there's a chance that Miami can sneak into that Tier 1 bowl and potentially get to Jacksonville. I'm actually rooting for it because I got family in Jacksonville, and I can leave my wife and kids there for New Year's Eve.
Nice. The only thing that worries me about Jacksonville is, you know, that game is on New Year's Eve, December 31st at night. I'm just worried that, like, nobody at this station is going to want to work that broadcast. Like, I know, trust me, like, I've got inside information, Manny. It's everybody who works here has already told me. I'm going to make sure I'm unavailable that day. I got to go. I've got no life, so you know I will be here, Manny. I will be here working. I'm just worried that I'm going to have to, like, run the board, host pregame, host halftime, host postgame, do everything, because I don't think anyone's going to want to work that night.
Well, you know what's funny is that, remember the college football playoff was, it actually started, every game was on New Year's Eve, right?
They figured out
more people are going to watch. And in the end, they had to change it because they realized that it's just a terrible time slot. Everybody wants to be with family and celebrating, you know, the coming of the new year. So you're right. I think you will be alone on the 31st. It might just be us that's sports writers there.
Yeah, right. It's going to be you might have to host the pregame with me, Manny. Just mark that on your calendar. It's going to be like you, me, Josie Gackey. I'll be running the board. You'll be color analyst with Josie calling the game. I'm not even sure if Don Bailey's going to show up for that.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think it'll be a good – if they do end up in Jacksonville, they're going to have a good opponent. It'll be an SEC team, so it's going to be a quality opponent. It's not going to be one of these – you know, MAC or Conference USA programs that you're pretty confident Miami can beat. So I think it's a good measuring stick game and a good opportunity for Miami to finish the season with a good win. That's assuming they get to play an SEC opponent, but we'll see what happens.
Were the and I know Miami didn't have a very good year, but were the all ACC selections a bit appalling when Gerald Willis doesn't get first team love?
Appalling, yes. Surprising, no. I've been a part of this thing now for almost 20 years, and looking at the way everybody votes, nobody pays attention to other teams. I mean, if you're a 7-5 team, the way they look at it is, okay, you'll get one or two guys on the team. That's just the way the selection process goes. They don't sit there and look and say, oh, Miami was the number two defense. First of all, there's not even that many voters who are from the Miami area. The majority of them are from North Carolina. You got all the North Carolina schools. Those are the people who sign up to be part of the ACC media. So I'm just telling you, it's always going to be slanted against Miami, and that's the real reason.
I mean, Gerald Willis is probably going to end up being a first-round pick or a second-round pick at worst, right?
Well, it depends. I mean, this is a loaded class at the defensive tackle position. You got the two Clemson kids that are going to be first-round picks. You got the kid out of Houston that might be first overall. There's a lot of talented defensive tackles. So there's a chance I think he goes on day two just because there's such a gluttony of players. But I could see Gerald Willis being a Pro Bowler and being a third-round pick for somebody just because there's so many guys ahead of him that have played longer, that have much more film than he does. This is really the first year that he's played a whole lot, and so I think there will be a little bit of caution against that, plus his fast. But I think in the end, Gerald Willis is going to be a great NFL player.
What do you think as far as a lot of people on social media campaigning for a lucrative contract extension for Manny Diaz? Do you think that's coming, and is there any concern that this offseason he might even take his talents elsewhere?
Well, I think it's natural and it's fair to be worried about that. Look, you look at just some of the top teams in the country, Ohio State, Oklahoma. I mean, they're winning with offense. They're not really putting much of a fight on defense. So people are looking at what Diaz did with Miami and saying, this guy's one of the best in the country, right? His whole approach, turnovers, aggression, you know, his ideas, the things he's been able to get across here at Miami have been successful. So I would assume there are going to be some other, you know, teams that have more money than Miami that are going to say, hey, Manny, come coach in the SEC, come coach in the Big 12 or the Big 10. We got bigger wallets than that private school in South Florida. Come play for us. And it's going to be up to Miami to match it. So I know everybody's sitting here saying, hey, let's hire an OC. You know, this administration of Miami has spent a ton of money building that indoor practice facility, raising that money for that indoor practice facility. And if they're going to hire an OC and pay Manny Diaz, man, I'm interested to see where all that money comes from.
I mean, is there – and you know, I know that that the fan base won't even want to hear me ask this question because they want to go outside and bring in somebody new, but is there any expectation that, like, Thomas Brown might be capable of calling plays? I don't know if that's even something that he's been kind of, you know, working on under Mark Richt, but he has been the offensive coordinator these past 3 years. I know he's a younger guy, but is there any chance he might even take play calling duties?
There's always that possibility that Mark could trust him and say, hey, it's your time to call the plays. I don't want to worry about that anymore. But, I don't expect that. I would expect that if Mark says he wants to hire an OC, Miami's officials are going to want to go out and hire an experienced play caller. Thomas Brown obviously would love to call plays, but that's a pretty big responsibility. And if Rick's not going to do anything to change the staff and just give up the play calling, I would expect that there'd be some people wanting to open their wallets up. And who knows? I would assume Mark, if he's going to give it up, he probably wants to make sure that whoever he hands it to has the experience of having done it before.
On this disappointing season, a lot of people would even call it a lost season, given the expectations. What would you say was the biggest disappointment for you, something you really expected to be in better shape this year and just wasn't?
Wide receiver. I mean, just that position alone. You heard so much about all the freshmen and all these, you know, talented guys, Mark Pope, Ezra. Just you expected more from them, and all we saw were drops. And I get it. Amon Richards was lost. Then you had Jeff Thomas leave after 10, 11 games. So, I mean, that was disappointing in its own right. But you really thought that these freshmen were going to play better and be bigger contributors, and they weren't. And they really didn't help the quarterbacks out at all. I mean, we knew the offensive line and the quarterback position, it was going to be a little bit of a struggle. But just the wide receivers, I guess, you really counted on those guys. And you know, special teams as well. I'd say Fiegels, everybody thought, you know, the punting situation, he'd get better after a rocky freshman year. It went in reverse. So I'd say those were the two biggest disappointments.
And you cover the Miami Heat as well, Manny. I mean, I feel like right now there's not much to be happy about. Canes basketball losing to Rutgers at home last night, although very, very thin rotation at this point. The Heat keep losing. Florida Panthers have been struggling. Canes football had a really tough season. Is there anything I should be happy about right now?
It's hard to find those things, right? You know, I know everybody was having sort of this debate, who's got the brighter future of all these teams. I would say this. I still think the Hurricanes football program has the best shot of rebounding the fastest and being a contender, even if it's just for the conference title. I mean, if you can keep Manny Diaz, you got some really talented guys on the defensive side of the football. You can figure out that quarterback situation, whether it's Jaren Williams or Nakosi Perry. To me, you're a lot closer to winning than, say, the Dolphins or the Heat even at this point. Or I just think it's a little easier in football to turn things around quickly. And the quarterback position is such an important position. You hit on that, and you're going to be much better. And I didn't think the team was that far off. I mean, even with the five losses and the disappointment, it's not like Miami was getting blown out of the stadium. I mean, those losses were narrow losses. You know, they were just, you know, sort of frustrating losses because the offense couldn't get going. So I think Miami could be back to being a double-digit win team next year if Manny Diaz is still a defensive coordinator and you get a quarterback.
Well, and last thing, how many of those linebackers, if any, do you think leave early?
I think the only one who realistically could leave is Michael Pinkney because Shaq Quarterman's got a lot of issues. He's not very fast and good in coverage. So I think his NFL grade, what he'll get back from scouts, and he may have gotten it back already, is going to be staying in school. Michael Pinkney's a kid who showed me something this year. I thought he was their best linebacker, so... And who knows financially, you know, what sort of issues behind the scenes if he's got to go and provide for Sam. There's so many things that play a factor. But I think if there's one guy who goes, it's probably Pink. I'd expect Quarterman and McLeod to come back.
As long as we avoid the Joe Yearby situations, we should be fine then. He's Manny Navarro, does an excellent job covering the Miami Hurricanes and writing columns at The Athletic. You want to check out his work there. You guys at The Athletic are doing big things, Manny. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having me, Donald. Take care, buddy.
Yeah, excellent stuff there from Manny, as always. And listen, I liked how quickly and to the point he answered my question about the biggest disappointment. Wide receivers, right? I mean, if you ask that question to a lot of people, they'd probably say, well, head coach, quarterback, play calling. I think he's got a great point. I mean, you talk about a position group that on paper was and should have been, even after the injuries and Jeff Thomas leaving and Amon Richards having to retire early, you still should have been so stacked at that position. We thought we had enough depth there that you could have survived some adversity, but you didn't have the depth that you thought at wide receiver. I thought that was a great answer there. 560-22 is how you get at us on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line. So the Kenny Stills quote that you heard today may not really mean what you think it meant. The Alex Dono Show continues next year on QAM. If I could dance, I would totally dance to this. What is this, Hialeah, Hector?
Dominican salsa.
Ah, is that what they play in Hialeah?
At some occasions, yeah.
Okay. Dominican salsa. How is, like, Dominican salsa different from Cuban salsa?
It's faster. Don't you hear it, like, just competitive?
I mean, I know it's fast. I didn't know it was faster than other salsas.
It is faster.
Okay. I learned something every day.
And then there's Puerto Rican salsa.
Is that faster or slower?
Yeah. Cuban sounds more, like, authentic. It's more instrumental. There's more of the drums. Puerto Rican salsa is more, like, computerized. It's more produced. Like, you know, engineered, not authentic. And then this is just, like, fast. You can just hear it.
I prefer chips and salsa.
You want Mexican music? We have Mexican music, too.
I would love some
mariachi
of that.
Mariachi band.
I would love some of that. Thanks again to Manny Navarro from The Athletic for joining us. Manny wrote a great piece today in The Athletic, by the way, for those curious about the future of the quarterback position at Miami. He spoke to a quarterback coach who's worked with Jaren Williams, actually changed his throwing motion. Quincy Avery told Manny that, and this is, I think, very good news, that Jaren Williams is not transferring, and he believes that he can contend for the starting quarterback job in 2019. I think competition is good for everybody in this spot, right? I mean, N'Kosi Perry showed some positive signs. I'm certainly not convinced that he's definitely the great quarterback of the future to lead us out of the football purgatory we've been in, right? I think as long as he keeps improving, we could have a special one in N'Kosi Perry, but the idea of actually having two deep in guys who can really contend for that starting job, and Jaren Williams, who, just so you know, by reputation has the better arm, maybe even a higher ceiling as a quarterback than N'Kosi Perry, who's got a pretty damn high ceiling that he's not touched yet. I mean, if Jaren Williams can offer some real competition for that starting job, whether he wins it or not, that's going to make us all feel better about quarterback at the University of Miami next year. So I certainly hope it's true that Williams is not transferring, because if he does, N'Kosi Perry and Cade Weldon, if he stays, and really nothing going on next year. So we need Jaren Williams to stick around and to add some competition at that position. So check out the great story that Manny Navarro wrote about that in The Athletic. He always does a nice job there. So let me hear, Hector, play for us what Kenny Stills said today. Let me give you some context. So Kenny Stills, I know that he hasn't played every game, but we're 11 games into the season. He's only got 20 catches all season. Only been targeted since week 5. He's only been targeted 6 times. Had one catch for 6 yards last week in Ryan Tannehill's return. Kenny Stills is not getting the football. Here's what Kenny Stills said today about getting open, and he said something at the end that will probably get your attention.
Every receiver will say that they're always open, but, I mean, there's plays, if you go back and look, like, you know, touchdown, game-changing plays, and so, you know, it's frustrating when you don't get that opportunity, but like I said, it's a team game, and I just want to help the team win, and when we talk about me not getting opportunities and then we talk about us losing, it's people are looking at me like I'm not producing, and it's like, hey, I can't produce. I can't throw the ball to myself.
So just without hearing – and first of all, when you hear that audio, you can tell that for being frustrated, as I'm sure he is, he's frustrated with a smile, right? Like, this is not Kenny Stills going nuclear. This is not Jarvis Landry throwing people under the bus the last couple years to the media, where he was clearly frustrated and letting you know how frustrated he was. Like this is Kenny Stills as politely as possible saying that, yeah, the offense right now, my role in the offense isn't really working. And he threw in saying that, hey, I have been getting open, but I can't throw myself the ball. Now, when people hear that, you interpret it immediately as, oh, he's throwing Brock Osweiler and Ryan Tannehill under the bus, right? That he's basically implying the only way to ensure I get more than one catch for 6 yards is if I could find a way to magically throw the football to myself. Well, just so you know, I personally didn't interpret that as him throwing those guys under the bus. I think basically Kenny Stills is just telling you, I'm trying as best I can to do my job, but the offense as a whole is not working right now. Okay, so maybe you can say he's throwing everybody else under the bus, but I don't think he meant that as a shot to single out either of those quarterbacks. In fact, I wasn't there today, but I did hear that Kenny Stills actually, after the locker room availability today, right after the locker room, so it wasn't like, you know, a media relations guy said, hey, you better backtrack on that. No, he did this, to my understanding, under his own volition. He realized what I just said there could be taken the wrong way. So right after locker room, he actually went back to the media room and told the media members, guys, just so you know, what I said there, it was not my intention to throw Tannehill and or Osweiler under the bus. That's not what I was doing here. I think that was more a commentary on the way the offense has gone. And just so you know, like, Kenny Stills has been getting open. I've been watching clips, video clips, film of, you know, a half dozen plays last week where Kenny Stills was wide open and wasn't getting the football. So it isn't untrue what he said about getting open. I just don't think that his intent with what he said was malicious, was intended to be malicious towards either of those quarterbacks. I think Kenny Stills is just telling you, just so you know, it's not like I'm out there not trying.
All right, calm down, Jaws, with the film study. All right, calm down.
Hey, I've seen enough video clips on Twitter. I'm an expert. I'm an expert on this Kenny Stills situation.
Relax, Phil Sims.
The guy's getting open.
I didn't know you were Phil Sims on the other side of the glass over there.
The guy's getting open. You haven't seen this film that I'm talking about, Hector?
Not really, no.
Wow.
I'm interested. I kind of want you to show me during the break.
I will show you.
Kind of break it all down for me.
I'm going to.
Did he beat the corner? If Tannehill would have led him, would he have been a completion? Like, I want you to break all that down for me.
I'll tell you the kind of routes that he's running. I'll tell you the coverage that the other team is in.
That's what I want to hear.
It's going to be like one of those John Gruden quarterback camps. Don't you think he wishes he was still doing that and not failing forward fast in Oakland?
Yeah. Now there's talks about Derek Carr being traded. What's up with that?
I would take him here in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
He's
heartbeat.
3 years younger than Ryan Tannehill. I think he's not only already, in my humble opinion, I would trust him more to run this offense than I trust Ryan Tannehill. I think he also has a higher ceiling, being 27 instead of 30.
I'd rather have Teddy Bridgewater, though.
Yeah, well, because you wouldn't be paying Bridgewater barely even a fraction of what you pay Tannehill. I don't trust his body, but I would take Teddy knowing that he is a lower paid bridge to get us to the next quarterback of the future.
Which is who?
Well, I mean, listen, I don't know if we'll be in position in a couple years for Tua Tagovailoa, but I would tank for Tua.
What about your boy Will Greer?
I like Will Greer. You know, he stocked up on those steroids at Florida and it paid dividends at West Virginia. I mean, Will Greer can sling it, man. Will Greer can sling it, but I'm holding out for Tua Tagovailoa.
No shot at Rozier?
How bad do you want to be? I mean, so maybe you draft Rozier this year. Not that he's even going to get drafted, but you sign Rozier this year. You start him next year. That guarantees you, if you start him in 2019, that guarantees you 0-16, you can draft Tua Tagovailoa. So I think that could be part of the tanking plan.
Just for you.
That's how you do that. But when you heard Kenny Stills, Hector, because you've got an idea of Kenny Stills' personality, like he wasn't putting a flamethrower to the team. Like, do you think he was intending to throw Tannehill or Osweiler under the bus?
I don't know, Piggy. He does his stuff where, like you mentioned, you know, the knee stuff, and not that anybody is agreeing with it or disagreeing with it on the show, but. It's kind of a distraction in a way. So I can see where maybe he does this to make it a distraction. You know, people could come off as being, oh, he's just trying to, you know, make another distraction. Here comes Kenny Stills again with off-field issues. But personally, no, I don't think he's doing anything detrimental to the team. I think he just genuinely meant that he can't throw the ball to himself because, you know, they're not targeting him. And he is getting open. I did do some film study.
See, you've done it too.
It showed up on Twitter, so
that's where I do my film study.
Yeah, so I mean he's getting open, but I just don't think I don't know. I mean he's just not getting the ball.
So he's clearly frustrated. I mean this is a guy who, you know, he's got 20 catches all year, 6 targets in the last few games. I can understand why he's frustrated, but I don't think he's the type of guy who wants to start a thing where he's calling out his quarterbacks, calling out his coaches. That's just not who Kenny Stills is for me. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. Somebody said, I think that was a shot at Gase. Well, I think that was from Rick and Davey who texted that in. I mean, he did say he wasn't throwing the quarterbacks under the bus. Didn't say anything about Adam Gase in that scenario. By the way, I hate to admit this. This to me is like, this is the type of breakthrough that people actually usually have to go to therapy for like 5 years to make. I don't hate the Cleveland Browns anymore. It feels kind of good saying that out loud. I still hate the Cavaliers. I still think Cleveland is an ugly city. I've been there. I can verify it. Lake Erie smells a little funny. I'm not saying Cleveland is a great place to visit, especially in winter. It sucks there. But I don't have the same venom towards the Cleveland Browns today that I had even 3 days ago. There's something about Baker Mayfield. That's a quarterback that I can get behind, right? I mean, Baker Mayfield has not only doubled down but tripled down on calling that fraud Hugh Jackson fake. Everybody freaked out in the media because he referred to Hugh Jackson, that burnout former head coach of his who, you know, somehow didn't get fired after an 0-16 season, 1-31 in his first 2 years there at the helm in Cleveland. Clearly, there were behind-the-scenes issues between Hugh Jackson and Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield called him fake. The media pressed it on him, thinking, oh, we're going to get him to retract it. He's going to say, oh, I shouldn't have said that. No, Baker Mayfield doubled down on it. Yeah, I called him fake. I believe he is fake. I don't have to tell you why. I'm going to keep that between me and him. But I'm standing by what I said about Hugh Jackson. Baker Mayfield to me, and I hope he ends up living up to that first overall pick potential. You know, not that I want him to, like, keep the Dolphins from winning Super Bowls or anything like that, but this is a guy that I can root for. He's got a little bit of that Philip Rivers type of swag. You may not know this about me, but really one of my favorite NFL quarterbacks of the last 20 years is Philip Rivers. I love the attitude where he would take a bullet for his teammates. He's not afraid to stick it to the man. Guess what? If Philip Rivers had been playing quarterback for the Miami Dolphins on Sunday, absolutely would have audibled out of that garbage 3rd-and-10 call in the fourth quarter. There's no chance Philip Rivers is handing it off to Kenyon Drake or anybody in that situation. I think Baker Mayfield has some of that juice as well. Texter writes in, Dono, we also don't hate the Cleveland Browns because there are a lot of Canes on that team. You're right about that. David Njoku had a good fantasy week for me. I love me some Duke Johnson. That's another reason not to hate the Cleveland Browns as much as I did in the past. It's kind of therapeutic to say that out loud. I don't hate the Cleveland Browns.
Weren't we hating on them before the season started together? Recall that.
Absolutely. I'm saying today, because of one Baker Mayfield, and also I've got a soft spot for all the Hurricanes players they have, I don't hate the Cleveland Browns the way that I did even a couple days ago.
Yeah, he's awesome. Baker. Adam I would Gase love him on him. This team.
Yeah.
Did you see him impersonating his OC? Because his OC is from Alabama.
Yes, that was great. He's got some of that. He's got some of that Philip Rivers sauce.
Yeah, man, it's nice to know that we have a quarterback that has that much enthusiasm.
Yeah. We'll take some calls on the other side. Bill Lindsay's going to join us at 7:20 to talk some Panthers, but we'll talk some Dolphins, Canes, and Heat next here on QAM. Guys, if you're looking to sell your home, you want to take some of that stress out of that situation, plus sell your home way above market value. If you're thinking about making a move and selling your home, you need to call Osmani Garcia with Keller Williams Realty. Here's why you need to call my friend Osmani. Osmani Garcia of the Omega Home Selling Team has a database of buyers in waiting. 473 plus buyers looking to buy a home right now in the South Florida area. Osmani actually guarantees in writing that if he does not sell your home, guys, he's going to pull out his checkbook and buy your home. So think about that. Has buyers ready to buy. And if he doesn't sell your home, Osmani will buy it himself. Here's what you need to do. You call Osmani at 1-888-411-HOME. And he's doing great work, guys. Using technology as well. This great tool, Matterport, where he does 3D virtual homes. You can see it from anywhere on the internet. You're looking to sell your home, he's going to put online a 3D virtual 360-degree tour of your home to help it sell. Recently sold a home just this week in the Coral Gables, Coconut Grove area, and actually got the seller $15,000 above the appraisal value. That's $15,000 extra in the pockets of the good folks who sold that home, thanks to Osmani Garcia. Sells homes for more money. Sells homes for at least 3% more money than the average agent. He's not the average agent. And guys, he sells homes faster. While the typical agent takes 120 to 180 days to sell a home, Osmani and his team sell homes in 59 days or less. That's why they're the home of the 59-day sale guarantee. Call my guy Osmani. He'll sit with you, establish a price and a deadline, and if that deadline passes and your home is not sold, Osmani will buy it himself, by the way, for cash. There's no risk to working with Osmani. He offers a one-day listing agreement. If after 1 day Osmani doesn't do his job, you're free to get out of the contract, but you're not going to have to do that. He always does his job. The National Association of Realtors reports that the average agent spends less than $250 a month on marketing. That's less than most car payments. That's less than dinner for five people. Osmani, meanwhile, spends thousands of marketing dollars every month to create demand and sell homes fast and for top dollar. And don't take my word for it. There are tons of great reviews, like Tim Johnson of Cutler Bay called Osmani, sold his home, his family in 48 hours with multiple offers at 100% of their asking price. So listen, if I needed to sell my home, there is no question the one guy I would call is Osmani Garcia, the home of the 59-day sale guarantee. Write this number down, 1-888-411-HOME. Call Osmani Garcia today and start packing. Some restrictions apply.